This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 24th of June 2022. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 24th of June. Your readers today, Nikki Baring.
Hello.
Norma York.
Hello.
And Andrew Parkinson.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Keith Vincent. The main headlines this week: King's Walk Work Moves Problem, Pop-Up Homes for Ukrainians, and Thank You Lunch for Winchester Charities Volunteers. So, Nikki, may we have the story behind the first headline, please?
Which was King's Walk Work Moves Problem. A former Winchester City Councillor has accused his successors of merely displacing antisocial drinkers by erecting new fencing outside King's Walk. Speaking at a Winchester Town Forum on Thursday, Ian Tate said the authority has simply papered over the cracks by replacing the old crenellated brick walls next to the South Downs Social Cycle Cafe with the new picket fencing. The authority previously said it was responding to concerns of local businesses and shoppers affected by a small group of people who often sat on what was formerly dubbed Drinker's Wall during the day. However, Mr. Tate has since said the council's solution has only served to move the drinkers to other parts of the city centre, insisting more positive outreach is required for a long-term fix. He said, "My worry is that all this is achieved is a displacement of street drinkers to other locations. And in fact, as some of us will have seen on our way here tonight, there are 15 or 16 people in St. Maurice's Covert with alcohol in open display. The City Council is undertaking work to revamp the 1970s King's Walk Arcade before the building is demolished as part of the Central Winchester Regeneration, also known as Silver Hill. Winchester's city centre first became an alcohol exclusion zone in 2005, meaning the authorities have the power to fine and arrest anyone caught boozing in a certain area. But Mr. Tate has said such powers are too infrequently used. He said, "We have an alcohol exclusion zone, but there is no enforcement of it whatsoever." He called for greater powers to be brought in. "If I were a parent bringing a child into Winchester, what is the impression given to that young person to see people who are in a state of real physical distress because of drink and drugs? The sadness is some of these people are real interesting characters and their lives are being frittered away by the lack of positive intervention." Councillor Paula Ferguson, who has recently taken on the portfolio of housing and community, said, "It is a concern. You can stop people being in one place, but their problems don't go away. It is something the council takes really seriously and does want to resolve, so I will take this issue away with my cabinet hat on." Councillor John Tippett Cooper said, "I used to work in homelessness services before my current career and have some understanding of the challenges the homeless community experience, often even after they have been rehomed. I think you and I would agree that the cause of a lot of these problems is the curse of addiction. It is such a complex issue, and I disagree with what you said about a lack of positive intervention. There is a lot of great outreach work which goes on in the city."
Pop-up homes for Ukrainians. Bosses at Winchester Construction Company spoke of their immense pride after waving off two emergency shelter units to the Polish-Ukrainian border, but insisted that this was just the beginning. Stelling Properties, which specialise in modular construction, has used its expertise to design and build transportable accommodation inside shipping containers to help house those living in dangerous and freezing conditions in refugee camps across Europe. The insulated units, which can be configured within an hour of delivery, include flexible sleeping living, kitchen and bathroom spaces which would potentially provide shelter for up to two adults and two children, or three adults at a time. Dubbed Project Rehouse, the endeavour runs as a separate staff-led charitable initiative and was started by the team just days after news of the war in Ukraine broke, as a way in which they could put their expertise to good use. On Friday morning, employees and trustees waved off the first two units from their Mitch Devastation base as they departed on the back of a lorry for a refugee camp in Poland. Steve Bryan, MP, was given a tour of the factory where the temporary homes were built and watched on as they left for Europe. He said, "It's such a simple idea. If it hadn't been invented, it would have had to have been created. And the great thing is that it has been created right here in Winchester and is actually changing people's lives across the world." Elena fled her home in Kharkiv with her 11-year-old daughter, Marsha, to come to Winchester under the Homes for Ukrainians scheme. In a bizarre twist of fate, Olena has been staying with Monica, an architect and senior design manager at Stelling, and was there to watch the first two units set off to help people from her homeland. She said, "This project is very necessary because a lot of people are having to stay without homes. A lot of people are having to stay in one house with all their relatives, and it isn't safe elsewhere. For a few weeks, it's fine, but when you're there for months and months, you need some space and privacy for yourself." Sam Whitworth, Engineering Director of Stelling Properties, said, "Seeing the units leave for Poland gives me an immense pride, predominantly for the team who have delivered them. A lot of people have given up their evenings and weekends to really go the extra mile and show they care. I couldn't be more proud of them." And there is a picture of the units and with Alina and Monica. And inset, there's a picture of the crane loading these units on.
Excuse me. This story is a thank you lunch for Winchester Charities volunteers. The annual event on June the 9th also marked the end of National Volunteers Week, which recognises the contribution volunteers make to communities across the country. Based in Winchester, Friends of the Family has been providing support services to vulnerable children and families across the district for nearly 30 years. It currently has vacancies for play volunteers to work with babies and young children, and befrienders to support children aged between 5 and 13 years. Karen Hazlitt, Friends of the Family's Chair of Trustees, said, "We are so grateful to all of our volunteers for the work they do to support children and families across the Winchester district. They are the beating heart of our charity, and without them we wouldn't be able to do the work that we do. It was wonderful to see so many of our volunteers at the lunch and to be able to thank them personally for their support." And the buffet lunch and drinks were donated by Waitrose. And this is accompanied by a picture here of the volunteers and a comment that the work of more than 30 volunteers was celebrated at Friends of the Family's annual volunteer thank you lunch in Winchester. Befrienders, play workers, counsellors and trustees joined staff in the garden, which was decorated with messages of thanks at the Quaker Meeting House. And this shows the 30 volunteers also in there, all raising a glass to toast the event, and they all look extremely jolly.
Thank you. That concludes the headlines. Now we continue with the death announcements, Christian comment, letters, historical items, chronicle comment, first person, and Belgarum. So we start with the death announcements this week. Cod. Richard George Woolcombe Codd, at home on the 21st of May, aged 80. Emery, Marion Edith Emery, nay Hayter, died peacefully on the 5th of June, aged 81. Frith, Teresa Frith, died peacefully at Westholme Care Home on the 9th of June, aged 93. Lewis, Jocelyn Angela Lewis, died peacefully at home on the 12th of June, aged 78. Osborne, Wendy Jean Osborne, died on the 9th of June. Price, Derek Keith Price, died peacefully at Basingstoke Hospital on the 5th of June. And Salter, Margaret Rose Salter, known as Peggy, died peacefully on the 13th of June, aged 90. Andrew, may we have a Christian comment, please?
And this week's Christian comment is titled Analog Church in Real Time, and it's submitted by Nigel Hemming, who's the senior pastor at Winchester Vineyard Church. It has taken a while, but most ministers I know report that numbers in church are finally beginning to get closer to pre-COVID levels. It's been a long haul since churches were permitted to reopen last summer. Congregations have tentatively come back into worship spaces, dealing graciously with masks and social distancing. Some of us have even started to hug one another again. In many ways, it feels like we are putting the pandemic behind us. But COVID has certainly left its mark on our psyche. Some are only just coming to terms with the personal trauma of the last couple of years and are very much in need of quiet and safe places to process fraught emotions and to come to terms with loss. We are finding that creating small groups for people to talk honestly through their stuff and to share and pray together is beginning to provide the space needed for healing. And many of us are still getting used to just being with other people in crowds. I hadn't realized how much I had missed that until last week when I was alongside 5,000 others at the Brixton Academy. Crammed together, waiting for the gig to start, I shuddered to myself thinking that not many would have done this a year ago. And then I smiled and gave thanks for vaccines and gathering and creativity and music and just people. One of the key decisions our church had to make, once we were back in the room, was whether or not to continue live streaming our Sunday services over the internet, alongside our in-person gatherings. It was a tough call with pros and cons on both sides. There are some with genuine medical reasons for remaining at home who really want to stay connected. But there also seem to be quite a few believers who have fully embraced the pajama Christianity vibe. In the end, we simply didn't have the resources to do both formats well. So we settled for, quote, in the room, quote, church, while filming and uploading our talks to YouTube for those who want to catch up later. Some have found, though, that post-pandemic, they have defaulted to a fully digital lifestyle. And there's a danger here. As Sherry Turkle writes, strictly digital interactions offer the illusion of companionship without the demands of actual friendship. For me, church will always be about the people. I can't do my faith outside of a genuine community. We are the people of God, the body of Christ, and as Jesus stated in John 13:35, by this everyone will know that you are my disciples, if you love one another. Learning to love one another in real times can be messy and frustrating, but it's what we are called to do. And it reflects the character and life of God like nothing else ever will. Loving people takes commitment, and it needs physical interactions. The online world has plenty to offer, but in the end, as Grace Pouch of Renovare stated, spiritual formation always has a local address.
Thank you, Andrew. And now we move on to letters to the editor, Nikki.
And this from Penny Clamp, nay, Lucas. Memories of the old Sainsbury's. Read your article on the old Sainsbury's store on Winchester High Street. I grew up in Winchester and remember that store very well. Despite being built in 1922, it was really Victorian inside, with lots of tiles and mirrors behind the marble counters. I must have been quite young, as I couldn't work out why the shop seemed so long. Of course, the mirrors doubled the size of it. It smelt absolutely amazing, mostly of smoked bacon. Marks and Spencer, on the opposite corner, also smelt wonderful, with its open fruit counters at the front of the shop. Sainsbury's has a really big archive of photos, so I would love to see one in the Chronicle. It would revive a lot of memories. I'm only 68, so there are plenty of us around who would remember the wonderful shop. It's amazing how these old Victorian-style shops hung on in Winchester, even when the era of supermarkets had got going. Opposite on the High Street was McFisheries, one of the first. When the smaller old-time shops on the High Street finally closed, their frontages were removed to the City Museum along with some of their contents. I loved to look in Rug, the tobacconist's window, under the Pentis, and see the Balkan Sobrani cigarettes and cocktail cigarettes with their multicoloured wrappers. Again, a fantastic smell of fresh tobacco in the shop, and I'm sure customers loved the specialness of shopping there. It was quite far-sighted of the museum people to obtain these shop fronts, as they really evoke a past time. It would have been impossible, though, to save anything from Sainsbury's, as it was much too big. Pity you couldn't bottle the smoked bacon smell, though. And that from Penny Clamp, near Lucas, of Lime Cottage, Osby, near Grantham. And there is a picture of the Sainsbury's as she described it. I can't really make much comment about it because it doesn't look very exciting.
Off-track rail. The rail unions have seen all the signals, but they are ignoring all the signals. The rail unions are off track with reality. The rail unions have tunnel vision. The rail unions have seen all the signals that are there is a war in the Ukraine. But they have seen all the signals that this war has caused gas and oil prices to rise, which in turn has caused prices to rise and the inflation to rise. They have seen all the signals that this war has also caused worldwide food shortages and worldwide food prices to increase because so much food comes from the Ukraine. The rail unions have seen the signals that the world has had 2 years of the COVID pandemic, which has greatly worsened all the economics of the world. The rail unions have seen all the signals which clearly say that if the rail unions get their pay rises, then lots of other UK unions will also go out on strike. What platform are the rail unions standing on? Is it the platform of ignore all the realities of the current worldwide situation? It is also the platform of me, 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 selfish me, me, me. The common sense train has been delayed by the signal failures of the rail unions. The rail unions really are living in a choo-choo land and cuckoo land. Rail unions get back on track with the current realities, get rid of this selfish tunnel vision, and get aboard the common sense train again. And that was by Paul Hickey of Parchment Street, Winchester.
And here's a short letter from Simon Lever of Juniper Close, Badger Farm. And this obviously refers back to an article that was in the Chronicle June 16th, and it's titled Weak Sentences. On so many occasions where a criminal has been arrested and found guilty on multiple occasions, but given a modest sentence, the individual, more often than not, continues to repeat crimes. On a national basis, the parole board has advised the release of dangerous criminals where they once again offend following being released. And he comes to the crux of his letter. I find it hard to believe that stabbing someone multiple times, killing this lady, had, quote, not intended to cause her death, unquote. And that's weak sentences from Simon Lever, Juniper Close, Badger Farm, Winchester.
Me again. It was pointed out to me that that photograph of Sainsbury's is actually the current Sainsbury's. No further comment. Next letter from Paul A. Newman, headed License to Litter. Over a fortnight ago, a work sign was left behind following completion of roadworks in the St. Paul's area full flood. It was subsequently removed, but as with depressing frequency, the sandbags remain left behind on the corner of Clifton Hill. What is the mentality of contractor staff who so often also leave behind metal signage or the rusting skeletal A-frames along major roads? Do their contracts include a license to litter? And that from Paul A. Newman, Cranworth Road, Full Flood, Winchester.
I will describe the photograph first of all, and it is a picture of the beach avenue on Romsey Road, and the origin is explained by the letter from Maggie Crooks. Beach Avenue. This in response to Belgarham's query about the beech tree avenue on Romsey Road, chronicled June the 16th. As for the trees, I believe they were planted by Hillier's nursery. In the book Hillier by Jean Hillier on page 108, I read that in July 1947, Harold Hillier spoke of the firm's many achievements, including the beech avenue along the Romsey Road in Winchester. Good luck with the other part of your query. Love people of an inquiring mind. And that's Maggie Crooks of Sarum Road, Winchester.
And here we have a suitably contentious letter from David Cosney, and it's titled An Anti-Boris Tory. It is interesting that Boris's fan club defend him mostly by pointing to the eating of cake on his birthday in an attempt to minimise his wrongdoing. In terms of the damage done to the world order, Ukraine, our country, the Tory party, and hurt inflicted on individuals, the cake incident is in the minor league. A simple list of Johnson's greater misdemeanours and misjudgments would exceed the word limit for this letters page. The partying and cake incident have acted as a catalyst and made people realise just how unsuitable Johnson is as Prime Minister. I am 71 and have voted Conservative in every local and national election since I was 18. I have told my MP that there is no way I will vote Conservative as long as Johnson and any of the present cabinet is leader of the party. The cabinet, who identified themselves with Johnson, are just as guilty. The truth of the adage that a fish rots from the head down is manifest before our eyes. The rot has seeped down through the cabinet and into over half the Tory MPs. Someone wrote on the Conservative Home website that it is vital that the Conservatives lose really badly in the next general election and spend 5 years reforming into a trustworthy, credible party. I couldn't agree more. Whatever damage an alternative government may inflict will be a lot quicker and easier to repair than the damage that Johnson has inflicted on this country and its standing in the world. If it is thought that Johnson's actions in relation to Ukraine mitigate everything else, remember that through cozying up to Putin and refusing weapons to Ukraine until it was too late, Johnson shares major responsibility with other world leaders for persuading the Russians that they could get away with the invasion of Ukraine. And there is a very hostile letter from David Gosney, Clayhill Close, Waltham Chase, Bishop's Waltham.
And on that final contentious letter, we'll move on to the Chronicle editorial comment, please, Nikki.
Which is headed, New Wooden Fencing is Not Enough. Regular readers of the Hampshire Chronicle over the years will know that city centre antisocial behaviour, often linked to drinking and drugs, has been a recurring story. Targeted funding in the early years of this century had reduced the problem, but it has arisen again in this age of austerity. Former councillor Ian Tate is right to raise the issue of the town forum, at the town forum, pointing out that the work to remove the brick wall and install wooden paling at King's Walk has simply displaced the problem to other parts of the city centre. Winchester has a rich culture of volunteering and charity work. See the front page photo story on Friends of the Family. Without it, the city would grind to a halt. Public authorities, such as councils, have grown dependent on utilising the work of charities. But charity only goes so far. Chronic issues that King's Walk highlights can only be seriously tackled by coordinated action from public funding that addresses the root causes. Or perhaps we are happy to get used to it.
Thank you. Now we have first person, Norma.
And this is entitled Where the Wind Blows by Khalid Aziz. Just back from South America, Santiago de Chile, to be precise, it's a long way, over 7,000 miles and 14 and a half hours flying time. While the good citizens of Hampshire were basking in a heat wave, temperatures, we were approaching South American winter. Chile was chilly. The mission was fascinating. 3.5 hours flying time further south from Santiago is Punta Arenas, a name familiar to anyone who remembers the Falklands War. There the wind blows at some strengths pretty well all year round. It's a vast area. You can put up any number of wind turbines and create a lot of clean electricity. The trouble is, there's no one there to consume the power. So, in steps, a company called HIF Global. They use the electricity to electrolyse hydrogen, combine it with carbon dioxide captured from the environment to create menthol, which can power ships cleanly or be turned into petrol, diesel or aviation fuel, so-called e-fuels. At the moment, there are 1.3 billion internal combustion engines, cars, on the world's roads. So far, there are just 20 million electric cars. So there's a long way to go before we're all driving electric, assuming the considerable infrastructure issues are surmounted. Hydrogen will play a part too. There are already buses which leave their depot in the morning charged with hydrogen, drive about 150 miles to return and fill up again overnight. However, if you wanted to go further afield in a hydrogen car, you would face the same fill-up recharge issues that still dog electric cars. The beauty of synthesised e-fuels is that they can instantly be turn a polluting internal combustion engine into a green vehicle, because although the car still produces CO2, it is only the CO2 that was extracted from the atmosphere to make the fuel. So every time a vehicle fills up with an e-fuel, it displaces fossil fuel, which effectively is left in the ground. There is no silver bullet to cope with climate change, but e-fuels are part of the zero carbon mix. A pilot plant is now under construction in Chile. Porsche have constructed it to take all its output for the next 5 years. Two more sites are being worked on in Chile and Texas. By 2030, they plan to have 12 full-scale sites up and running. In Chile, the USA and Australia, They plan to have 12 full-scale sites up and running in Chile, the USA and Australia. It will mean around $50 billion of investment, a big number, but the energy business is used to big numbers, and it would seem that people are falling over themselves to invest, such as is the glittering prize. The 12 sites will produce enough e-fuel to effectively decarbonise 5 million legacy internal combustion engine vehicles, and it can grow from there E-fuels use existing distribution networks. The same ships, pipelines and road tankers. Filling up with e-fuels will be just another choice at the pumps, just like choosing a premium petrol on today's forecourts. Various governments have announced a ban on sales of new internal combustion vehicles after 2035. However, the legacy of older vehicles will live on. One calculation is that even in Germany, the most efficient country for updating cars, it will take 22 years from 2035 for total electric conversion. It's said that by the magic 2050 deadline for zero carbon, 50% of the vehicle fleet in the United States will still be powered by internal combustion engines. Looking back at Europe and the UK from the bottom end of the world makes you think. The Chileans are delightfully courtly and hospitable. Commercial too. Having seen their oil and gas run out some years ago, they're eyeing their natural wind asset with great enthusiasm. For them, it offers the potential of rebirth. For us, it's a win-win too. Who'd have thought that an Italiated country thousands of miles away would provide such a great prospect for the saving of our environmental skin?
Thank you, Norma. And now we've got a couple of items from Belgarum, Andrew.
And the first of those from Belgarum this week concerns Ronald Hurst, who some of you may remember seeing around Winchester a few years back. The story about a new takeaway in Winchester to be called Burpin' Ron's sparks memories of a man after whom it will be named. Ron Purse, known to many as the Burping Man, died at home in Fifields Road, Highcliffe, in 2006, aged 71. Mr. Purse was a familiar figure, pushing his decorated pram around during the annual hat fair and at Christmas. Former Mayor Chris Pine said in 2006, "He was a lovely old thing. He had a heart of gold, although his way of dealing with things was not often the most sensible. He was a Winchester character, and in a strange kind of way, he was one of the people that Winchester accepts and looks after and makes Winchester that kind of slightly oddball place. Mr. Purse would talk to strangers in the street with a cheery, 'Never mind, soon be Christmas,' or 'Soon be Easter.' He played the role of peacemaker during an anti-poll tax demonstration in the Guildhall in the early 1990s. Protesters had hijacked a council meeting and feelings were running high with police on their way. Mr. Purse, who had tagged along, stood up and in his high-pitched voice appealed for calm. The resulting widespread laughter diffused the situation. The late author, Terry Pratchett, who lived near Salisbury and visited Winchester regularly, said when he spoke to Belgarum and dispelled popular rumours that he had based one of his characters on Mr. Purse. But not everyone was an admirer. Mr. Purse would fail to abide by a 2-minute silence on Remembrance Day, and a former caretaker at the School of Arts would attend the graduation shows and give forthright opinions on the students' work. And this is accompanied by an old photograph of Ron Purse, dressed with a Union Jack top and holding up a bottle of actually Lucozade. The second of the articles is an end of parking for delivery drivers. The sharp increase in takeaway deliveries has led to more unauthorised parking around the city centre. One hot spot is St George's Street, with drivers serving people wanting a Big Mac from McDonald's. Popular parking spaces for the drivers are outside the Brooks Centre, McDonald's own service area, and the cobbled area near where Tom's Deli used to be. But now that cobbled area has been declared off-limits, and parking cones installed to stop it being used. It was clearly a potentially dangerous place to park, with poor visibility for both the delivery driver and the other road users. Yeah, and that is accompanied by a photograph of the traffic on St. George's Street and the coned area, but it's still a very, very busy area.
Thank you. Now we have the announcements this week. We start with What's On, and at the Theatre Royal on July the 7th and 9th, the Blue Apple Theatre, which supports performers with learning disabilities, will perform their version of Shakespeare's Macbeth, a story about a Scottish nobleman who kills the king to take his throne. Proud to be the scourge of purists, Winchester's Blue Apple throw out whatever isn't needed to push the story forward. Expect Macbeth in the original language, but prepare for the unexpected, including moments not in the original. And if you want information on that and other events at the Theatre Royal, you can telephone the Theatre Royal box office on 01962 840 440. That's 01962 840 440. And on Saturday, July the 3rd, the Twyford Waterworks is open, having an open day when the whole site will be open to explore and enjoy, and there will also be additional visiting exhibits. The lighting up time ends on Friday the 24th of June at 4:51 a.m. and begins at 9:24 p.m. And on Wednesday the 29th of June it ends at 4:53 a.m. and begins at 9:24 p.m. And if you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone the contact number on the key fob attached to the memory stick. And can I just remind listeners of the existence of the Winchester Colebrook Club, which is specifically for people with sight impairment. The club meets monthly on the first Monday of the month, except for May and January, and it's between 2 and 4pm. They meet in St Lawrence Parish Room in Colebrook Street, Winchester. And for more information, contact Samantha Frolick. Telephone number is 07714 004 803. That's Samantha on 07714 004 803. Now we continue with items of general news, Nikki.
And here's one headed Hares, as in the animal, of Hampshire Public Art Trail. On the trail of giant hare sculptures. 10 sculptures have been placed around Winchester in a new public art trail. The 6-foot-tall, colourful figures are part of the Hares of Hampshire art exhibition, with 31 hares dotted around Winchester and Southampton. Hares of Hampshire launched last Thursday and will be in the city for 10 weeks until Thursday, August the 25th. Each sculpture has been individually designed by a different artist. At the end of the exhibition, they will be auctioned for the Murray Parish Trust, which supports ill children across the South. Sarah Parish, actor and co-founder of the charity, said, "The reaction from the general public has been phenomenal. We've had numerous questions about the hare itself, and there's been a real buzz around the Hares of Hampshire Trail. It's fantastic to see so many people looking forward to it. We're really excited to unveil the designs that some very talented artists have been busy painting on our giant hares, and to be working with so many amazing local businesses." And there are lots of photographs of the different hares. There's one on Castle Avenue, which is of a sort of beige colour with lots of, like, almost tattooed patterns all over it, looking quite serious. Then there's a charming yellow one on the Broadway outside Abbey House, and they managed to sort of paint a smile. It's looking so happy. Again, yellow with some black designs on it. Then there's a rather grumpy half-blue one outside the Guildhall. It's got green legs. I think I'd look quite grumpy if I'd been painted like that. Then there's one that looks like a hare. It's sort of brown and sort of with hair lines on it. And a very blue one on the weirs, again with a beautiful floral design all over it. And one in the window of the Theatre Royal with a 50 on it, which I think probably represents 50 years of the Theatre Royal going. Who knows? Again, with designs of moons and stars and Saturn and various other things. And then there's one on the weirs at Wharf Mill. They kept the face fairly clear, but the rest of it looks like they just chucked paint at it from sort of various paint cans. interesting, but different. And then outside the dreaded picket fence in Middlebrook Street is one that looks yellow. I can't describe it. It's not a correct colour for a hare, It could be a golden hair. There you are, a golden hair in Middlebrook Street.
A guide for Ukrainians. Winchester City Council has begun distributing three editions of a welcome guide for Ukrainian guests and their hosts at the second in a series of community hub events at the Guildhall. The guides include information about life in the Winchester district and offer advice on currency, food prices, benefits, finding work, and assessing specialised support services. Councillor Paula Ferguson, Deputy Leader of the Winchester City Council and Cabinet Member for the Community, said, "I'm so pleased to see how well these publications have been received today by both our guests and hosts. We know this is a very difficult time for everyone, and providing the translated welcome guide is a small but important thing we can do to help. I can only imagine how traumatic it must be to lose your home and livelihood almost overnight because your country has been invaded. And it's clear that many of our guests are extremely concerned about family members and friends they've left behind. Our aim, therefore, is to make sure they receive the warmest welcome here in Winchester and that we offer as much support as we can to help them and take the first steps to rebuild their lives with us. I'm very grateful to all the organisations who attended the session so far, and also to Winnell, Tesco and Costa Coffee, who kindly provided refreshments for our guests. The next hub will be held between 10 and 2pm on Tuesday, June the 21st, in a courtyard room at Winchester Guildhall. Access will be available via the Visitor Information Centre on the High Street.
And a local house has sold for £68,000 over the guide price in an auction. A three-storey townhouse in central Winchester has sold for £418,000 in a bidding war. Fetching £68,000 more than the guide price, the End of Terrace freehold property at 16 Tower Street was among 121 lots listed online across southern England by Clive Empson Auctioneers. Rob Marchant, the Hampshire's firm auctioneer, said, "We anticipated keen interest, given the location and potential, and this proved the case with 39 bids made and an extra £68,000 paid above the guide price." There was another factor for bidders. There is conditional planning permission for conversion into flats, one with one bedroom and the other with two. It will be good to see new life breathed into the property, which has lain unused for some considerable time, although we are not privy to any plans the new owner may or may not have. According to the particulars, the lower ground floor comprises a kitchen and reception room with access to the rear courtyard, and on the first floor is the hallway, two reception rooms and a bathroom, whilst the second floor has two rooms.
Inn overlooking Village Green is in the spotlight. It's the Riverside Country Inn with spectacular views, famous pizzas and a secret garden. The Buck's Head at Meonstoke is set next to the village church overlooking the Village Green and on the River Meon in the heart of the South Downs National Park. It's the perfect pit stop on the Meon Valley Trail, a great cycle route on an old disused railway line going between West Meon and Wickham. The pub is also close to Old Winchester Hill Iron Age Fort and the Norman-influenced Church of St Andrews and Corhampton Church, which enjoys Saxon features and dates from 1020. The sister pub of the Shoe Inn at Exton, another riverside pub with stunning views of Old Winchester Hill, the Buck's Head has had its five letting rooms recently refurbished and gained a secret garden for guests as well as an outdoor covered stretch tent. COVID closed the pub just a week after the last major refurbishment in March 2020. The large Valoriani pizza oven serves up homemade 24-hour sourdough pizza every day, and other favourites on the menu include fish and chips and burgers and sausages sourced from the local butcher. Brunch, including full English, vegetarian options, avocado or eggs on toast, or a brunch burger is available at weekends. Real ale, lager, a variety of gins, cocktails such as the popular espresso martini, and Hampshire Pantry Coffee are all enjoyed by locals and visitors alike. A quiz takes place every fortnight on a Sunday at the pub, which is family and dog friendly, and so close to the river that it has been known to flood. Owner-tenant of just over 2 years, Annabel Terry, said, "We have stone floors, open fires and plenty of outdoor seating with views. There's a great atmosphere. It's a picturesque village and we have a good quality pizza. It's also a great stop on the South Downs Way for walkers. The Buck's Head is the perfect place to stay if exploring Winchester, Petersfield, Portsmouth or Southampton, and our refurbished rooms are really lovely. And there are photographs, but I have to say, this is my local. I haven't actually been to it yet, but I'm certainly going to go. They have chosen the dreariest photograph because for the very front of it is beautiful."
Short list of designs for St. Maurice's Covert. Winchester City Council has called for residents to have their say on three shortlisted designs for the huge blank city centre wall. Earlier this year, civic chiefs announced plans to commission an experienced artist to design and deliver a vibrant, bespoke mural at St. Maurice's Covert. This project forms the final phase of parts of plans to enhance St. Maurice's Covert passageway, its surrounding environment, providing locals and visitors with an attractive gateway to the cathedral from the High Street. An open call for designs, which saw over 30 submissions from artists looking to design and deliver a vibrant bespoke mural for the Covert, was undertaken, and three shortlisted finalists, Sarah Hodgkins, Molly Hawkins and Joe Swannell, have now developed their designs, which can be viewed as part of the online public exhibition. All three artists had very different approaches to what they wanted to achieve. Sarah said, "My aim is to create an inspiring mural that engages young and old visitors and residents alike. It will knit together historical and modern references, open out the space and be sprinkled with a little humour." Molly outlined her approach as a joyful design holding aspects of local heritage while celebrating contemporary design. She said, "Using the colours of Winchester City Council, the colour palette is curated to ignite inspiration and to enhance the surrounding environment." Finally, Joe said, "I want my design to be a giant gilt-edge invitation to the people of Winchester. From all that modern High Street has to offer, it's just a short step this way to follow your painted contemporaries, meet some of the people who shape this city, and find yourself in another time and space. From St. Swithin to the Deliveroo cyclist in a hurry, we share the same spaces across time. We are all part of a continuum." Councillor Lucille Thompson, City Councillor Cabinet Member for the Business and Culture, said, "I'm delighted that the response to this exciting opportunity and the quality of designs has been exceptional. The panel have had some extremely difficult decisions to make. Each design is unique and inspiring and answers the brief beautifully. I'm very much looking forward to seeing the transformation St. Maurice's Covert for both residents and visitors to enjoy. I wish each artist the very best of luck." The Council's online public exhibition is now available until June the 24th, 2022, via the Council's website. Members of the public are encouraged to take a look at the three designs and share their thoughts. And there are three pictures of the designs. The first one is Molly Hawkins' one, and that has the red, blue and yellow colours of the city, and it is quite a modern one. It's got the great wheel and it's got the church and it's got, yeah. And the second one is by Joe Swannell, and this one has an archway with an old wall, a signpost, a bit of the city gardens, It's got Jane Austen sitting on a bench with a more modern gentleman. There's a lady walking purposely through. There's an old soldier. There's a city clock. And there's a chap leaning against the wall. And the third one is by Sarah Hodgkins. And this one has numerous arches. And in the arches, there are modern people, skateboards, someone in a wheelchair, someone with flowers. And in between the arches are the old figures. Interesting. Very interesting.
A local vineyard has won the Best in Show for sparkling wine. Hidden in the Hampshire Downs, just outside Whitchurch, lies a world-beating secret vineyard. The Coates and Seeley Winery was established in 2008, and since then has been producing high-quality Bretagne, which has been taking on the French champagne houses at their own game. Over the last decade, their sparkling wines have been winning prizes across the board, and they found themselves served in some of the ritziest places in the UK, including the Dorchester Hotel, the Savoy, and Kensington Palace. Impressively, they are the only non-French sparkling wine to be sold at the world-famous Henry V or Henry V Hotel in Paris. Their incredible success recently saw them win the coveted Best in Show trophy in the 2022 Decanter World Wine Awards and a platinum medal, despite them being a very English secret. Kit Malthouse, who's the MP for North West Hampshire, who visited the vineyard last week, said, "It was 6 years ago to the day that I last visited Coates and Seeley, and it was great to see the business going from strength to strength. I have served their delicious wines at several occasions and special occasions over the years, and I am so proud that they are served regularly in British embassies across the world. Everyone is always delighted by the exceptional quality of the wine, and surprised to know that the grapes are grown right here in lovely northwest Hampshire. And congratulations to the whole team on their stunning prize at the Decanter Awards, and I look forward to watching their vines spread across our beautiful chalk downland." And for more information, visit coatesandseeley.com. And this is accompanied by a picture of Christian Seeley and Nicholas Coates enjoying a glass of their famous sparkling wine against the background of our beautiful northwest Hampshire countryside.
Pupil thrown out of exam over watch. A furious mum has slammed her vulnerable daughter's school after she was recently kicked from an exam for wearing an Apple watch. Zena Patterson says she was left incensed after discovering invigilators at Henry Beaufort School had removed her 15-year-old daughter Francesca from the exam hall halfway through her biology GCSE after spotting the watch on her wrist. The mother of two says she and her husband brought the watch for Francesca, who is diagnosed with social communication difficulties, language disorder and 10% hearing loss in left ear, as a safeguarding measure, and never dreamed this would be allowed to happen. Henry Beaufort School has said it doesn't comment on individual cases, but insisted examination board regulations are closely adhered to and well communicated to students in advance of examinations taking place. Mrs. Patterson said, "The reason I'm so incensed about it is because of the way in which they've handled the situation. Francesca has got some learning difficulties. She's a lovely little girl, plays the violin. She's never even had a detention in the 5 years she's been at school, and it's just a sweetheart. It's this injustice which is infuriating me. She's been allowed into the exam, and at no point have any of the invigilators noticed that she's wearing a great big Apple watch that is literally part of their job. Regulations stipulate that they have to announce twice, once students are seated, that any phones, MP3 players or smartwatches are handed over. That's the first warning. The second warning is that they have now to tell kids to hand over any wristwatches, not just smartwatches, before the exam has started. Because of Francesca's social communication difficulties, one of her fears throughout school was being told off or doing something wrong, hence why she's never had a detention because she's such a good girl. So they're expecting me to believe she sat there and defied all those warnings. I cannot and will not believe that. Something about this just doesn't add up. Either they weren't warned the proper time, or it wasn't done clearly. Invigilators couldn't initially get through to Mrs. Patterson, a diagnostic radiographer, as she was in theatre. They instead spoke to her husband, who claims they admitted a major overhaul was needed among the school's exam auditors. Despite their protests, a report was submitted to the exam board, and the family faced an agonising wait over half-term before eventually being told Francesca had failed for the entire paper on June the 7th. It has really knocked her confidence, Mrs. Patterson said.
Plans rejected for a new house in Hyde. A plan with more than 100 objections for a replacement house near Hyde Abbey Gate has been refused by the councillors. They said that the proposal was out of keeping with the historic area. The application was for the demolition of a two-storey detached property and the construction of a replacement at 3 King Alfred Place. An original plan for this was submitted in 2019 and also refused. Since then, the applicant changed the materials and moved it back from Saxon Road. The total number of public objections submitted to the Winchester Council was 156. They cited reasons such as it being out of keeping with the character of the area, overscaled, aesthetically displeasing, and harming the setting of Hyde Abbey Gate. The planning committee heard that 16 supporting comments had also been submitted, saying that the design improved the area. Penny Stewart, an objector, said, "Hyde Gate is a Grade 1 listed building and a national scheduled monument. Hyde has a very steeply pitched roofs and the proposal has a flat roof. It has nothing in common with the surrounding buildings. It fails to reflect the local distinctiveness." Councillor Sir John Tippett Cooper, who represents the St Bartholomew ward, said, "I have real concerns about the application. The site is in the golden triangle of heritage sites in Hyde Abbey Gate, St Bart's Church and Hyde Abbey Gardens. The property is in need of improvement, but this will have to have an impact on the heritage site." Ross Galtras, the applications agent, said, "We want to build a low-carbon house, which is a substantial improvement. This will contribute to the City Council's carbon reduction target. It is important that the site is modern and doesn't try to imitate the other buildings." Councillor Frank Pearson had concerns over the proposal's impact on the area. Planning Officer Megan Osborne said, "I believe it fits into the street scene of the area. I don't think it would set an unwelcome precedent." Councillor Pearson said, "This is a contemporary design, but it's like a carbuncle in this area. This is within the boundary of where Hyatt Abbey was." The committee's chair, Councillor Theresa Evans, said, "The applicant has worked very hard to accommodate the previous objections, and I can't see any reason to object to this plan." Councillors voted on to reject the application, with 5 against and 4 for it. The reason was given that it was too large and the roof being out of keeping with the character of the area.
And a Winchester group are going to perform at The Fringe, the Edinburgh Fringe. A new theatre production company in Winchester is preparing to take a show to the Edinburgh Fringe this August. Plant United Productions will be presenting Hotel Elsinore. Susanna Hamnett from the company said, "We are a new production company who also happen to be a Winchester-based family of artists, actors, mother, an adult son and daughter. We moved to Winchester from Toronto during lockdown and have been creating a new play together that we are taking to the Edinburgh Fringe this August and also presented as a preview come fundraiser at St. John's Church in July. I perform my solo show, Nearly Lear, in that church 12 years ago as part of a world tour that included a wide array of venues in the UK, as well as Broadway and the Sydney Opera House. My children were then 13 and 9, and were on this five-month tour as homeschooled stagehands. And now they are creating and acting with me in this new play, Hotel Elsinore. The show is about families and was created during lockdown. It's set in the liminal and claustrophobic confines of a hotel room where the family is thrust into facing their unresolved issues. Shakespeare's Hamlet is the pilot, or the pivot, around which the family's story revolves. And Susanna and her children, Joshua McGregor and Lily McGregor, star in the show. And the fundraiser at St. John's Church is on July 9th, starting at 7:30 p.m. Tickets on the door, cash only, and it costs £15 or £10 for concessions. And the article is accompanied by a photograph of Joshua with her son and daughter and holding a skull.
Four scams to watch out for. We've been discussing this, and we have all been subject to some form of attempted scam, and some of us have succumbed. Scammers are preying on hard-pressed households' need for cash, and with living costs surging and people eager to save money or make a bit extra, some offers may seem particularly tempting. Here's a look at some of the scams which people may be particularly susceptible to as living costs bite. Number one, tax scams. About 2.1 million tax credit customers are expected to renew their annual claims by July the 31st. Criminals will mimic government messages to make them appear authentic on their phone calls, texts and emails. HM Revenue and Customs, HMRC, says scammers may try to threaten people about non-existent tax bills, or they may try to tempt them with tax rebates. Scammers may also claim there is an issue with the person's national insurance, NI, number or direct debit. HMRC suggests searching gov.uk for genuine information and guidance. Number two, fake insurance. Motorists may be tempted by supposedly cheap insurance deals, particularly young drivers who often pay more for their insurance and may be inexperienced at buying cover. But insurance giant Aviva has warned people to watch out for offers from unsolicited or unusual sources, particularly if it's via social media or word of mouth. Ghost brokers pretend to be genuine brokers offering car insurance. Policies are bought through legitimate companies but using false information. They are then doctored and sold on. It's only when someone claims that they realise the policy isn't valid. People can check a broker's status on the Financial Conduct Authority or British Insurance Brokers Association websites or contact insurers directly. Number three, holiday scams. Holidaymakers may be looking to cut their costs on getaways, but it's worth remembering that action fraud figures show victims of holiday and travel-related fraud lose £1,868 on average. Action fraud suggests people check whether firms are members of ABTA, look for any slight changes to the website you are viewing, such as the domain name going from .co.uk to .org, and do a thorough online search for reviews to see if anyone else has had problems with the company. And finally, four, bogus rebates. Fraudsters may try to exploit people struggling to cope with rising energy bills too. There have been reports of criminals calling people to obtain their bank details, claiming to be officials who need them to process council tax rebates to help people deal with the rise in living costs. Get Safe Online, that's three capital letters, Get Safe Online, is advising people to hang up immediately if they receive such a call.
Alice thieves take valuable vintage metal. An historic railway line has put out a plea for help after callous thieves unscrewed signs and stole them from one of its stations. The Watercress line were calling for information after vintage metal signs were stolen from the wall on June the 4th from Ropley Station. The signs, which all date back to pre-1960, are valuable to the station as an important piece of heritage and to the visitors' experience. The railway has told the public to look out for the signs on eBay or specific railway auction sites. So far, the tourist attraction in New Alresford has received lots of support and suggestions via social media, but no successful leads to find the signs at present. Acting Managing Director of the line, Alison Houghton, said, "It is very upsetting that someone has mindlessly stolen the signs, as they form part of our visitor experience. They also feature in our education package as we compare historic advertising with the modern approaches. Direct replacements may possibly be found for some of the signs, but that is not guaranteed. Other vintage metal signs are available to buy, but they're expensive. And like many other visitor attractions, we're still feeling the financial impacts of the pandemic. Mostly, however, I would like to appeal to whoever took the signs to find the empathy to return them. The Watercress line, which runs over 10 miles from Alresford to Alton, is run by a large army of volunteers and it is recently honoured with the Queen's Award for Voluntary Service. It hosts many popular events throughout the year, such as its Day Out with Thomas, events for families, its Summer Sizzler, Diesel Gala and 50s and 60s weekends. For more information, go to thewatercressline.co.uk.
And continuing our transport theme, the next article is about a hydrogen bus on show in the city centre. A hydrogen-powered bus made a clean, green appearance in Winchester on June the 16th to mark the Adapting Services to Address Climate Change conference being held in the city's Guildhall. The bus, that can seat up to 90 passengers, has a range of 650 miles and produces zero emissions, and it proved a hit attraction with passers-by on the Broadway. The conference, led by Winchester City Council, discussed a range of key issues relating to the work local authorities are doing in relation to climate change. The bus featured as part of a Hydrogen, the Way Forward debate, looking to include this technology in the fleet of local authority vehicles. Attendees addressed climate change issues and discussed how local authorities can adapt to using more environmentally friendly transport services, such as alternative fuels and hydrogen vehicles, which are fundamental to offsetting the effects of climate change. Dr. Robert Best, the Director of Engineering at Wright Bus, spoke to attendees about the operational issues with hydrogen vehicles and how they can support the local government sector. Councillor Kelsey Learney, Cabinet Member for Climate Emergency, said, "We have a strong commitment to zero carbon buses and refuse freighters and other vehicles providing local services, and this is critical technology for decarbonising longer distance travel. It's always a good idea to keep an eye on the future, and this bus certainly shows us what the potential direction of travel could be for sustainable public transport. And the next APSE event is its summit in Glasgow on October the 5th and 6th. And the article is accompanied by a photograph of a lean green bus machine. So it looks very, very, very smart. Yeah, and there it is parked in the roadway, in the Broadway.
Pleased to review CCTV of car meet. Police have said they will review CCTV after a special car meet tribute for a man killed in a crash. Hundreds of people donned yellow on Saturday night as part of a memorial car meet for 27-year-old Harrison Cross. Harrison died on June 7th in Station Hill, Eastleigh, following a crash with a lorry. On June the 18th, the car community from across the south rallied together to pay their respects. The event started at Britannia Parking in Southampton, before making their way to his family home on Fair Oak Road in Bishopstoke. People adorned their cars with yellow balloons, ribbons and paint, as Harrison was well known for his yellow BMW E46 compact. Hundreds of people lined the streets along with his family members and friends as drivers passed his home, revving their engines and beeping their horns. Police have said they will review CCTV footage of the night to identify offences. And there's a picture of various cars on the road and the people lining the road. But on the road are a lot of burnt rubber. How can I describe that? We have people doing wheelies and accelerating and braking. So maybe some reason to check the CCTV.
Flag raised to mark the start of Armed Forces Week. A flag was raised outside the Great Hall in Winchester to mark the start of Armed Forces Week. The event, organised by Hampshire County Council, saw dignitaries, past and present members of the armed forces, gather for a short ceremony on Monday, June the 20th, before the flag was raised. Vice Lord Lieutenant of Hampshire, Rear Admiral Ian Henderson, CB, CBE, DL, Chairman of the Council, Councillor Marge Harvey, Leader of Hampshire County Council, Councillor Rob Humby, and the Council's Armed Forces Champion, Councillor Andrew Joy, were joined by Cadet Corporal Leah Murby, who raised the Armed Forces flag, and Louisa Armitage, trumpeter from the County Youth Orchestra, who played the Hampshire fanfare. The Vice Lord Lieutenant said, "On behalf of HM Lord Lieutenant, it is an honour to pay tribute to the commitment and dedication of our military personnel, veterans and their families. Hampshire is home to a large armed forces community, whom we are proud. We offer our sincere gratitude for their service and sacrifice." And there's two pictures. The first one is of the two flags that have been raised, and the second one is of Louisa Armitage with her trumpet.
Campaigners in a Make Votes Matter walk. Inspired by the Great Pilgrimage of 1913, which took place in support of women's suffrage, Make Votes Matter campaigners in Hampshire recreated part of the original route of local pilgrims walking from Eastleigh to Winchester. Organiser James Southern said, "Turnout in elections is often depressingly low. People don't vote because they feel either the result is a foregone conclusion, or their vote is wasted, or that all politicians are the same." Campaigner and Romsey resident Sally Yeldon said, "Make Votes Matter includes members of all the political parties, as well as those who feel politically homeless. It is a grassroots organisation with the aim of making Parliament and the local council closely match how the electorate vote through proportional representation." The walk was part of a national action day, with some campaigning groups organising walks and events over several days. You can go to makevotesmatter.org.uk for more information. And the article is accompanied by three photographs. So you've got part of the group having their photograph taken out by King Alfred's statue, all showing signs, Make Votes Matter. Then you've got them walking along by the River Itchen. And one of the ladies there is dressed as she would have been dressed, or as a lady would have been dressed, back in 1913.
Rare bird is found in Valley. An amber-listed bird species has been found recovering in the Avon Valley, scientists find. A study of breeding pairs of redshank, a threatened native wading bird species, whose population is recovering in the Avon Valley in Hampshire, has shown one intrepid individual travelled more than 100 kilometres to Wales for the winter. Its epic journey is helping scientists from the Game and Wildlife Conservation Trust, GWCT, to understand more about the movement and habits of this amber-listed bird species to help better protect it in the future. The bird was spotted in Wales after being colour-ringed in Hampshire as part of research by the GWCT's wetlands research team. Across the UK, redshank breeding pairs and breeding success has been steeply declining since around 2000. But this key breeding ground in Hampshire is backing the trend, bucking the trend with an increasing population of breeding redshank, highlighting the benefits of targeted management and suggesting there is a chance to reduce the decline of redshank elsewhere in the UK. Lizzie Gration, wetlands ecologist, the GWCT, said, "We need better knowledge of redshank habitat use and site fidelity within the breeding season and between seasons. We also need to know about the movement of birds in the valley, where they feed and where they go in the winter. This information helps us improve land management recommendations for redshank by understanding the specific habitats they need for nest and chick rearing and the areas of habitat required by each pair." In the summer of 2021, Lizzie fitted 12 individual redshank with colour rings. Highly unusually, all 12 of these colour-ringed individuals have since been resighted, 9 of them outside of the Avon Valley and one as far away as Newport, Wales. Of the 12 birds successfully ringed, one family in particular showed some interesting results. Lizzie colour-ringed an adult female and her 4 chicks in late April 2021. Since then, the adult female has been resighted 5 times, mostly at Stanpit Marsh near the mouth of the Avon. One of her fledged chicks was also spotted there. 2 of the other fledged chicks were resighted in Hampshire at Langston near Chichester Harbour and Keyhaven near Lymington. The 4th, by contrast, turned up over 100 kilometres away at the Gwent Levels Wetland Reserve in Wales. Lizzie said, "We were not expecting any of the birds to travel this far, and it will be particularly interesting to see if this bird comes back to breed in the Avon Valley in the future." And as a picture of the Avon Valley gamekeeper, Rupert Brewer, with 2 adorable little red shank chicks in his hands, which he's probably about to ring.
Martin Kemp and Tinchy Strider wow crowds as punters. Crowds of more than 3,000 people flocked to Swanfest to enjoy 5-star performances from a host of stars. Martin Kemp and Tinchy Strider were among the celebs who wowed guests at the school music festival at Swanmore College on Saturday. 3 stages of music, including an acoustic option, provided the backing track for what was a fun-packed day in mostly sunny conditions. However, the festival didn't go without one minor disaster occurring. Footage showing Tinchy Strider set collapsing on him midway through his performance. Luckily, it was quickly resolved and the rapper was able to pick up where he left off. Aside from the music, a host of entertainment was on offer for revellers to enjoy. A giant foam pit provided a hit with some of the younger guests, much to their parents' dismay. Organisers have since thanked those involved in putting on the amazing event and admitted work has already started ahead of Swanfest 2023, and there's a picture of Martin Kemp and Tinchy Strider shaking hands.
And here's an article which will probably could be viewed 2 ways, depending on how you view your garden, and it's called Gardening for Various Species of Butterfly. Summer is peak butterfly season, and gardens can be as good a place as any to spot these winged wonders. Butterflies and moths are important pollinators and, along with caterpillars, represent vital food for birds like robins and blue tits as well as bats. However, many of our once common butterflies have declined dramatically in recent years due to catastrophic habitat loss, increased development, agricultural intensification, and climate change. As an example, the small tortoiseshell has decreased by a massive 80% in southeast England since 1990. Yet, butterflies do have a lifeline. Together, the 16 million gardens across the UK form an area for wildlife larger than all our National Wildlife Trust nature reserves. This patchwork of habitats helps our wildlife to move about freely, forming a vast living landscape that links urban green spaces with the wider countryside. A variety of different butterflies visit our gardens looking for food, places to breed, or spots to overwinter as adults, larvae, and pupae. Species that can be spotted in gardens include the peacock, the red admiral, the painted lady, the small white large white, the green veined white, the orange tip, the meadow brown, small copper, and the common blue. An ideal butterfly garden will have a wide variety of plants throughout the year to support the insect's life cycles, from those emerging from hibernation to egg-laying females, caterpillars, and adults. Early flowering species such as dandelions, aubrietia, and native bluebells are good sources of nectar, and these could be followed by buddleia and red valerian, and finally ivy flowers, which are a great late-season asset in the autumn. Many wildflowers and long grasses are also excellent larva food plants. Whether your garden is large or small, or simply a flowering window box, it could throw these declining insects a lifeline, especially in urban areas. Each garden will attract different butterflies depending on the plants, the trees, and the shrubs present, plus what the surrounding habitats are like. However, while almost any flower with nectar can attract butterflies, it's a slightly different story for caterpillar food or host plants. In fact, the caterpillars of most butterfly species have just a short list of host plants. Often this is because caterpillars require particular chemicals from a plant to bring out their warning coloration as mature butterflies. Growing host plants for caterpillars in the garden may not guarantee that the relevant butterflies will visit, but it's worth experimenting with different host plants to see which species might find your garden suitable to breed in. Hampshire and Isle of Wight Wildlife Trust have more information on how to support butterflies on their website, and that's at hiwwt.org.uk. And I'm sure there'll be some gardeners that are putting a lot of effort into how to not have caterpillars on their plants, but this is an alternative view.
Winchester's new private healthcare facility opens. A sporting legend officially opened a new state-of-the-art private healthcare facility on the outskirts of Winchester. Olympic medalist and Commonwealth champion Alex Danson Bennett, MBE, joined Winchester MP Steve Bryan to cut the ribbon on the new facility on Friday, the June 19th. HealthShare Clinic Winchester in Chilcombe is now one of 87 HealthShare clinics open across the country. It aims to combat NHS waiting lists while providing quality care and treatment. The clinic is equipped with the latest technology and equipment, including a 3T MRI scanner, the highest quality MRI scanner, and the only one available in Hampshire. HealthShare's executive director, Jackie Dorney, said, "It's been a long time coming, and we're super proud of what we've been able to achieve. The team are absolutely amazing. We have a wonderful cohort of staff and super doctors. We're just really excited to be able to open and launch so that we can get patients into the building so that they can access the services that they want to and as quickly as possible. An awful lot has gone into the opening. We've gone from design stage, being out in porter cabins in the car park, and now we've got this wonderful five-star facility. There's been a lot of time and effort from all the team to get us to this week, and a lot of doctor input, which is great to have, especially from the early stages, so we can make sure we've got all the patient flows and all the geography of the building in the best way we possibly could." Guests included Alex, ex-GB in England, women's hockey champion. Local dignitaries and businesses were taken on a tour. Alex described the facilities as beautiful, having received treatment the night before the opening. And there is a picture of all the various cohort and the hockey champion international Alex Danson with the most enormous pair of scissors cutting the green ribbon. It's brilliant.
House builder digs deep for volunteer day. A Hampshire house builder laid down its building tools for a day this month to provide some vital volunteer support to Naomi House and Jack's Place in Winchester. Barrett Homes, which is building new homes across the county, sent a group of its apprentices to help out in the Children's Hospice charity on June the 7th. and the assistance was extremely well received. Naomi House and Jack's Place, located in Sutton Scotney near Winchester, are hospices supporting life-limiting and life-threatening children and young adults from Hampshire, Wiltshire, Berkshire, Dorset and the Isle of Wight and beyond. A five-star house builder set 8 of its volunteers to work on the hospice's gardens, where they spent the day mowing lawns, pulling up weeds and clearing leaves and rubbish. Helena Maskell, volunteer services manager, said it was a pleasure to welcome Barrett corporate volunteers to Naomi House and Jack's Place. The team did an excellent job and, well, were all eager to hear more about how their work was helping to ensure we can provide a wonderful outdoor environment for our children, young people and families. On behalf of everyone here, I would like to thank them for their amazing support. And there is a picture of 5 of the volunteers, 4 of them young ladies and 1 gentleman.
And a renovation has just been finished of a village phone box and converting it into a library. Telephone boxes in a village have been receiving a lick of paint from a dedicated group of volunteers as they get a second lease of life as community libraries. Winchester MP Steve Brine dropped by to hear about the project in Twyford from 2 volunteers, Councillors Sue Cook and Dr. Ingrid Percival. After seeing the project, Mr. Brine said, "I'm absolutely loving the work being done by Sue, Ingrid and so many others, who are transforming the old red phone box into a new community bookshare. This is the big society, alive and well." Twyford Parish Council has purchased the red phone box, along with a similar one at Northfields, from Community Heartbeat, with the aim to spruce them up for their new use. And the council have put forward funds to replace the glass, secure some new red paint and install some signage. Councillor Sue Cook said, "This has been a real community project at heart, and it's always lovely to see the village come together for something like this. Thank you so much to Ingrid Percival for letting me join in this project, and a special thanks to Roger Salvetti, Daryl Henry and Henry Smith of the Telephone Box Restoration Team." And this is accompanied by a photograph of the phone box. And in fact, I actually watched them doing this. Yeah, so there were a team of 4 people at the time, all actually looked like they were more dressed in hazmat suits than anything else, but they were completely covered top to toe. Because I came across the phone box and wondered why there were 4 people in hazmat suits attacking the phone box. But in fact, they were doing a fine job of painting it. And when I saw it, the box had already received its first coat of paint. So, but the picture here is just before they started that work, with Steve Brine beaming at the camera, along with a couple of the volunteers. And that's at Twyford, just by the old Twyford post office.
Green City Ranking. Winchester has been named one of the greenest cities in the United Kingdom, a recent study has revealed. Biophilic Design Agency, Exubia, found that Winchester is the UK's 3rd greenest city by analysing data from more than 100 different major cities and towns across the UK. It found Tunbridge Wells to be the greenest, followed by Ashford and then Winchester.
Winchester Marathon in 1982. Preparing hard for the city marathon. Thousands of people will no doubt already be training hard to pound the pavements during the Winchester Marathon this September. These are the pictures of when thousands line the streets like an army of athletes invading the ancient city on March the 14th, 1982. Only 45 of the 950 runners failed to finish and the 13-mile half marathon. More than 1,000 entered the stamina-sapping full marathon, with 781 crossing the finishing line. Despite suffering a calf muscle strain after only 3 miles, Barry Watson went on to win the marathon in 2 hours and 25 minutes. Alan McGee, a dark horse, kept pace with him until the 12-mile mark and finished only 1 minute behind him. Barbara King was the fastest female runner, clocking 2 hours and 58 minutes, and Celia Catt finished 18 minutes later. And there are numerous pictures of various people in some very peculiar positions. There's one chap with his leg in the air, lying on his back. There's another chap doing push-ups. There's number 2827 coming in, looking absolutely exhausted. There's a chap in a wheelchair, and there's another chap with number 2001. He looks a bit more cheerful. Yes, and there's an elderly couple, him with a Union Jack waistcoat and her in a bubble cup hat.
A little bit of history to end, so that concludes our extracts for this week. So thank you to our editors for selecting the extracts for this week, the copying and memory stick preparation teams, and of course thanks to our readers, Nikki Baring.
Goodbye.
Norma York.
Goodbye.
And Andrew Parkinson. And for me, Keith Vincent, goodbye and do have an... Sorry, I cut you off. Goodbye and do have an enjoyable week. And when you finish with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and return it as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. Thank you.